A book review. Jo Nesbø, the creator of the Harry Hole series, has a new thriller out, and it's not a Harry Hole book. It's very, very different. It's much less violent, which has upset some of the critics because they enjoy the particular glee in extreme violence that the Harry Hole books contain on their pages. And John Connolly once told me that he was confronted by a little old lady at a book signing ceremony somewhere in rural England, and she took him to task for his latest book not being violent enough. She said, "I've got used to a certain level of violence. You don't provide it in your last book. That's not good enough." And there are people who expect a certain tone, a certain atmosphere. And this is very different. It's set in a more rural part of Scandinavia. And it tells the tale of two brothers, Roy and Carl. Their parents die suddenly, mysterious circumstances. And Roy is left as a protector to his younger brother, who is impulsive and needs protection. Then the younger brother, Carl, decides to travel the world. He wants to become rich. He wants to become famous. And Roy stays behind in their sleepy village. And he takes over a mechanics business in the village, and he's satisfied. He has occasional secret affairs with married women in the village, but he's happy. And then Carl returns, and he has a new wife. She's charismatic. Her name is Shannon. She's an architect, and they're full of really exciting plans. They want to build a spa hotel on their family land. And Carl says, "I'm going to make Shannon and I rich. I'm going to make you, Roy, rich, and I'm going to make all of the villagers rich too." And that homecoming sparks off a series of events which threatens to derail the hold that Roy had over their shared past, because it is obvious that they are secrets, and those secrets have been buried. What are those secrets? And they are definitely going to be brought to light despite Roy's best efforts, and lives and people are going to be damaged, perhaps even destroyed in this process, and other people might die, and who are they? Who might die and who might kill them? It's less intense in terms of its language. It's more contemplative, and it describes rural life in a way that is thoughtful and really interesting. And I actually really enjoyed it. Quite a lot of the international reviews thought that it was a little too meandering, and they wanted the urban grit of the Harry Hole books. But I thought this was a wonderful diversion. Normally, I get a bit cross with thriller writers when they move away from a character that I've known to enjoy and whose next episode I look forward to. But in this one, I was quite glad that he'd put Harry Hole in the cupboard for a while, and I'm very glad that he'd brought the brothers and the family and the secrets of the village out to the pages of The Kingdom. Two brothers, one town, a lifetime of dark secrets. William Boyd is an English-Irish writer. He's very productive. He's written 16 novels. He's written many short story collections. He's written plays. He's written film scripts and so on. And his latest book is called Trio. And it's great fun. It's really a charming, fun, but at the same time, quite telling read. It's set in the latter part of the swinging 60s, and the trio of the title are Elfrieda Wing, a once successful novelist who now has writer's block and a secret alcohol problem. Talbot Kidd is a film producer who is in the cupboard, and Annie Vicklund is a film star. She's got a bit of a pill problem, and she's having a secret affair with her co-star. It's 1968, and the three stories are intertwined, and the central narrative thread is the shooting of a film in Brighton, and that film is produced by the gay man in the cupboard, and it stars the actress, and it is directed by the husband of the once successful novelist with writer's block and a secret alcohol problem. And the book is, I suppose, if you have to say what it's about, it is about business, it's about the business of filmmaking and how absurd that is. It's about creativity, how crazy it is to even think of writing a novel. And it's also about the equally, perhaps even more ludicrous business of acting. And quite clearly, the author understands the acting, the filmmaking, the noveling. And he brings a wonderful, wry, wise, funny truth to his exploration of all of those things. He's a wonderful writer of dialogue, is William Boyd, and he is also very understanding of what keeps relationships alive and what brings relationships to an end. And he brings that sensibility and that understanding to these relationships and some of the relationships between the central characters and some of the very interesting subordinate characters. So no relationship is left unexamined and unexamined in a wry, gentle, truthful, profound, touching way. It manages that thing which not many novels manage, which is it manages to make you laugh, it manages to make you wince, it manages to make you tear up, and it manages to make you think. And it does so all in a very approachable and appealing way. It's called Trio by William Boyd. And then it took me time, because it is, before you get to the acknowledgements and the notes, which themselves take up about 50 pages, but before that you get to 701 pages of A Promised Land by Barack Obama. And when he set out to write his autobiography, the idea was that he would put it all into one book, but he didn't manage that. So this book, A Promised Land, ends with the killing of Osama bin Laden. And it's impossible not to read this book through the lens of what is happening in America at the moment. And it's impossible for me, let me not place strictures on the way you might approach it. It was impossible for me not to think about what Donald Trump might write in his autobiography, except he wouldn't. He'd get somebody to do it for him. Because he can't really write, can he? Because it's so self-reflective. It is so charming. It is so dignified. He comes across as a profoundly civilized man who thinks deeply about every decision that he makes in his personal and in his political life. He is self-critical often. There are times when I go, okay, you don't have to explain every nuance of how you got to this decision. But I mean, it talks about his younger years, how he got into politics, his time as a feckless student, and he, at times he's charmingly confessional. You know, he mentions that the only reason that he studied up on some of the revolutionary writers was because it would stand him in good stead with some of the revolutionary women on campus that he was keen to get close to. And throughout, the tone is one of civility and reflection. And what did my presidency achieve? What did it not achieve? I came into office at the time of the 2008-2009 depression. These are the decisions I took. These are the reasons why I took those decisions. These are the advisors that I hired, because I knew that I alone didn't have anywhere near the wisdom to steer a complex country like America out of a complex situation like this. This is where I think we succeeded. This is where we failed, and we failed badly. He does address the issue of the divisions between Republican America and Democrat America, and he concedes to his role in sharpening those divisions at time, and agonizes over what he might have done differently to present a less divided America to Donald Trump to divide even further. It's 701 pages, but if you like this. I read a review somewhere a while ago which said something like, regard it as 2 350-page novels and approach it in that regard, and it won't seem like the table collapser that the 701 pages might otherwise seem. I'm glad that I read it slowly and thoughtfully, and I just really was impressed with the book and with the man. Barack Obama's A Promised Land.